Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the Mouth of Manliness. it is another episode via Zoom with my new, well, friend for the last year or so, Eddie Temple Morris.
Friend for life, Eddie Temple Morris. That podcast just started. It was the beginning of something beautiful. I've ended up managing you, organizing you and focusing you and getting you to a better place. You know, got your website now and your Instagram is really focused and you've started selling your work, which is phenomenal.
It's madness. It really is like a dream, you know, one of those things I always wanted to be able to do, sell artwork. So it's like ticking off the dreams. This last year has been a lot of ticking off dream come true things.
Yeah, fantastic. Actually, I shouldn't really call you my manager because I haven't actually invoiced you for it. I haven't commissioned anything. So let's just call me friend that is focusing you.
Yeah. No, you've been amazing, really. We've been in touch like pretty much constantly, haven't we, really?
Yeah. No, it's great. You've transformed, man. It's amazing. It's great to see you. And part of your transformation is, well, the evolution of your podcast now. So it's just you, and it's more stripped down and simple. And here we are in lockdown, you know, over Zoom, like everyone else.
Yeah. I'm finding Zoom's pretty good. I've been talking to quite a few. This is the third one I've recorded using Zoom now, but I'm kind of planning for you to be my first episode out, like as solo.
Oh, cool.
So, everything's happening, really. Mouth of Manliness is remarkably strong at the moment. So, yeah, I can't, you know, I'm gutted about Brad, but I've just got a resolve where I want to keep going, and I've got a lot of energy in that, and I'm like, I'll direct it. Oh, and fellow, you're a patron of my back dog, and now yeah. I'm... An ambassador.
That's right. Yeah. So I asked you. So I've accepted the role of patron in between the time that we haven't seen each other directly after that first podcast, the Mouth of Manliness number one that I did. I've accepted the role of patron of my black dog, which is a game changing new. I think I might have mentioned it in the podcast. It's a peer to peer.
Yeah,
it's a peer to peer service. So I'm kind of like winding back with calm a little bit, letting them just get on and do their thing, because I feel as though, you know, my work here is done with them, even though I'll always have an association and will always love and cherish everyone there. I just feel as though they don't need my help as much now, because they are like, you know, they're a huge organization now. When I joined them, there was literally one person. That's it. Right. One person and no office. Calm was only one person when I joined. So
The amazing Jane who started the whole thing. And now it's lots and lots of people, and it's an office, and it's, you know, they get a substantial amount of money to through the kindness of individuals and companies to fund it. So I'm now involved in My Black Dog, who are in the same place as Calm were when I first joined, i.e. earning a few thousand pounds a year and needing funding and needing awareness and needing to get out there into the frontal lobes of people like you and I, you know, who are interested in mental health. So yeah, that's very, really cool that you've taken on that role of ambassador. I feel as though you know, you're absolutely perfect, because you've got a really great mental health podcast. You know what it's like. You've been there. You are there most of the time, you know, like you're in and out, and you're always, would battling be a fair word with you? Battling a black dog?
Strangely enough, I feel like I've battled the black dog all my life, really. And it's only really maybe this last year when I'm not battling so much.
Skirmishing.
It's there, but I don't need to battle so much, which has been quite a massive step, really.
That's great.
My psychotherapist was saying, oh, we could start thinking about winding it up now, because she thinks I'm doing so well.
Amazing. That's amazing. So that means, yeah, you're self-soothing.
Yeah, I am. Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, that's the way that it should be. You know, when we're functioning at our most optimal, I say that's the way it should be, but I know that we shouldn't be islands to ourselves, and to function actually optimally, we are herd creatures. And, you know, this is what we're going to get onto with this. I really want to talk about, especially now in the context of lockdown, where we are now, to talk about wellness and we're losing physical connection with people, and we are herd creatures, you know.
Yeah.
If the first humans on the savannas of Africa had not bunched together, then, and helped each other out, and were it not an altruistic kind of mutually beneficial society, then we would have died out as a species. If we were just, you know, out for ourselves and not connecting with people, then the human species would have died out. You know, we are connective creatures, and here we are now, like, connecting.
Yeah, it's strange. I suppose there's that thing about this massive shared experience is almost taking everyone down to a very, obviously it's not that in reality, but taking us all down to a certain level where we're all kind of in the same boat to some extent. And I do think that could potentially bring out the good in people.
Well, it is.
And
absolutely is, Nick. You look around, you know, there's so much good happening. You know, look, before this, you know, all you'd see is like, oh, you know, there'd be lots of, I do good news stories on Virgin Radio every single day. So I'm really hyper connected with the good that happens in the world. And there is more good news pouring in now than at any time before. You know, from just, you know, I mean, I as soon as I've done this, I'm gonna go down and I'm gonna cook lunch for my neighbors.
Yeah,
and I've done that every like weekend for the last few weekends, and I've read about stories about someone who's trained her Labrador dog to take food to her ultra at risk neighbor who has an underlying lung condition and can't go out. And she takes the dog takes meals to the neighbor every day. Or, you know, like IKEA finding all of those masks and giving them to the local hospital. Or, you know, there's just so many great examples. Nike have just given 32,500 trainers to frontline NHS staff. These are trainers that were designed by nurses that you can slip on, that you can wipe clean, that you can walk for miles in. They're like specifically designed for nurses, and they're giving them away along with, like, you know, millions of pounds worth of gear for them. It's just so much good happening.
You're totally right. And I kind of I just see it like walking around the streets and people are just that little bit, like you do get people looking as if to say, keep your distance. But like I find like, I'm smiling at people when they walk past. And like yesterday was the VE day and everyone's out in their drives and I'm walking the dog and I'm just going, hello, hello. You know, like I wouldn't normally do that because I think I'd get kicked in around here.
But, yeah. Yeah, yeah, we had a little street party, all maintaining safe distance, like last night, 6 o'clock, 6 till 7:30. You know, everyone in my street all the people around me were all out with a glass of wine or a beer or whatever, and people had cooked little bits of cake and nibbles and stuff, and everyone was maintaining distance and having a lovely sort of social time, getting to know each other and meet each other. It was just, you know, it was really lovely.
Yeah, I think so. I like what you were saying about herds, with us being like herd creatures.
Yeah, we are.
I like that, and that's very true. That's very true. And I'd almost never really thought of a term to sum that up, but that does sum it up perfectly. I recognise that our need for contact, our need for reciprocation, you know, like in many ways we want to be told we're all right, so you want to be around people so that you can feel like, yeah, I'm okay. And like often when I become ill, I close in, and the lack of contact with others, I think, is the thing that makes me a lot worse. I have to be out. I have to be talking to people, even if I don't even want to, because it actually makes me feel quite good about myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really interesting time now where, you know, you and I, we're talking through a computer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and we say we are herd creatures, and we do crave connection. I mean, obviously, that's not everyone. You know, there are like sociopaths. There are people who, for whom, you know, they just want to be alone and they want to predate on everybody else. But the rest of us, some normal, nice people, we want contact. And here we are in a place where because we're being forced to, because of this awful virus, you know, we can't have as much connection as we can do. But what's coming out of it, as we've just said, is actually more connection than we've ever had. You know, we're talking to people on Zoom more. I mean, haven't you talked to your mates and your family more now than ever before? And, you know, there are these, like you say, you're smiling to people. Every time I see a police person or an ambulance worker or any, because I go into work every day. I'm still going to work every day. I'm going on my bicycle. And I wave at them and I smile at them. You know, I smile at people as I'm walking down the street. But it's very interesting that this is in the context of this modern society that we have, which is, fact, the most lonely that we have ever been in terms of mental health, in terms of psychiatry. You know, this is a proven statistical fact. The human race is at its loneliest, and mental health is now the new polio, malaria, whatever. It's the new big killer, you know. It's the biggest killer, because we are so actually lonely. And, you know, I feel as though we, because we're living, a lot of society are living through their phone so much. Like Matty Healy says, you know, in the Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships, that last 1975 album, which encapsulates this whole thing absolutely perfectly. You know, we are so, we think that we're connected, but we're actually not connected at all. You know, these digital connections are replacing actual connections. And the hack for life is to use your Facebook, your Instagram, your WhatsApp and stuff like that to connect with the people that you love and that you value and that give you good, positive things that make you feel good. You know? And then use those things in order to enhance your actual connection. Have that beer. Invite them round for lunch or dinner. Like, go have for a walk together. Like, using these things in order to enhance actual connection is the life hack of is the hack and the answer to anyone who says, oh, Facebook is evil and, you know, all social media is terrible. No, I mean, like, I use social media to connect with loads of friends and family and loved ones, and I'm always, you know, making new connections and you know, and nurturing those. And I guess that's easier for me to do because I, as I suspect, like you, I'm an AD on the ADHD, heavily on the ADHD spectrum, and one of our character traits is having lots and lots of friends.
Yeah.
Is that the same for you?
The ones. Yeah, I find I use the social media in exactly the same way. I kind of like I've reconnected with lots and lots of people because of social media. You know, like people like from who I know from school. But I hadn't seen since school, and now I reconnect with them just because of that. And like, then you end up meeting up and that kind of thing. And you can use it to spread positive things as well. I really, people complain about social media all the time, but it's not social media, is it? It's your response to it.
Yeah.
If you're using it in that way and you're not getting sucked into a wormhole where you're just feeling bad about yourself because everyone else looks better or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just how you respond to it. It's not the thing itself. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Absolutely. And, you know, there should be a reality to it all. It shouldn't just be everything that's great about your life. I love it when people just post, oh, you know what? I feel really shit today. You know, this is me looking, feeling really, really crap, and for this reason. And I like it when they like. I like it when people share stuff. You know, I can't remember. I did a post, and I was looking terrible. I was in bed, looking up at the phone. I can't remember why it was, but I was just like, I think I was just sort of saying, not everyone. I think it was. You know what? Maybe it was a Christmas thing or something like that. Like, you know, remember that Christmas is just terrible for some people or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'm a big fan of splurgers, you know, on Facebook, on Instagram, who'll just splurge a picture of themselves feeling terrible, and not in an intention seeking way, but like in a, like, again, I think it's a herd thing. Like you say,
yeah,
it's nice to have, empathy. It's nice to have empathy, isn't it?
Yeah. And we seem to lose that quite a lot. Or people are only so empathy if they're kind of told what to show empathy for. Like now, at this time, you know, it's like, right, we all got to have empathy for the NHS, whereas in a few months ago, no one cared about the NHS.
Sorry. Well, no Tories cared about the NHS.
That's the one. We love the NHS, and
we're a non-sociopath. Yeah, I mean, this is really bittersweet. What's happening now? You know, all of these conservatives that were in the process of dismantling our beloved NHS, and there's all you and me and the Mannix all going. And Iron Bevan would be spinning in his grave at what Jeremy Hunt is doing, you know, in that when he was really, really going at it. And now they're all, oh, there are heroes. They're just brilliant. Aren't they great? And they're saving our lives and stuff like that. You know, you absolute shower of bastards.
Yeah.
The ones that are taking them apart. But I don't want to get down this.
I agree.
I don't want to get down a political wormhole.
We're just with that kind of stuff. So, what were some of the things that you kind of had some ideas about what you wanted to talk about?
I've been really thinking about wellness a lot during lockdown.
Yeah.
And I've been really focusing. Actually, even before lockdown, I've been really getting into, as I said in the first podcast, I was really getting into Wim Hof, the Wim Hof method, which is it's a controlled hyperventilation and cold showers. I was combining that with meditation that I was already really into, and I was getting amazing results from that. And so that I had a really interesting update literally while this was being set up. by my lovely girlfriend, because I'm using her laptop. So I was talking to an old friend of mine, and he called me up to say, Eddie, thank you so much for telling me about the Wim Hof method, because I feel, I've been doing it for 6 weeks now, and I feel 10 years younger. My body feels 10 years younger. I just feel like I've just can't remember feeling this good. And my immune system's really working. I look younger. I feel younger. And then most of all, he said, I profoundly thank you, because I told my sister about this. He said, my sister has had this, what was the word he used? A chronic lung condition that she's had for over a year. And her doctors have had her on steroids and all antibiotics and steroids, and all kinds of awful things. I mean, God, don't even get, actually, no, do get me going on antibiotics. I will go down that wormhole soon. But so she's had this chronic lung condition, which she couldn't shake. And her doctor, her GP and any specialist could not shake it. She's had it for over a year. She did the Wim Hof method for 2 weeks. She's just thrown all her steroids in the bin. She is completely, totally, 100% cured. So the thing is, I know, you know, I know from experience, I've been doing this for more than 3 years now. And I've seen the research. I've researched a TV documentary about Wim. I've met Wim Hof. We're working on some stuff together. I know that it changes you physiologically. I know that it, for example, makes your capillaries and vessels and arteries all expand and dilate a tiny bit, so that your heart is more relaxed, your body is internally more relaxed. I know that it's incredible for inflammation. And the thing is, you know, that the inflammation is where the cutting edge of science is now in almost everything. You know, they're looking at inflammation markers to see what's going to happen to you in the future, and that almost everything that's bad that happens to people happens because of some form of inflammation, not just, you know, my back's inflamed or whatever, but inflammation on a cellular level. Right. And the Wim Hof method works on bringing down inflammation hugely, hugely. And you can gain control of your autonomic nervous system to, you know, do something as just like, you know, slow your heart rate down, or, you know, to suppress flu symptoms, which obviously everybody wants to do that now. And I've discovered this very interesting thing from listening to, and this is a gift from dear Chris Evans, the Rich Roll podcast. So I'm going to use your podcast to recommend another podcast. Yeah. If you're interested in wellness, in diet, all of these really interesting things, then listen to the Rich Roll podcast. Absolutely incredible. Rich, R-I-C-H, Roll, you know, as in rock and roll. He's a Californian ex-ultra athlete who's been talking to some very, very interesting people, scientists, doctors, and ultra athletes, and all kinds of. I found some amazing things. So I one of the people that I was really fascinated by was this English doctor, DNA specialist, who's a renowned professor in Harvard University. Yeah, and yeah. He's been looking into this thing in that our bodies produce called resveratrol. And I don't want to go down the resveratrol wormhole, and I'm not a scientist, but I can simplify it just for this podcast by saying that it is something that our bodies produce when our bodies go into a certain type of stress. Now, what the stress that I'm talking about is not the stress that causes us sleepless nights, not anxiety stress. I'm talking about a physical stress, like having a cold shower, or extreme cold, extreme heat, hyperventilation. It comes from when we were, you know, cavemen, hunter gatherers, and we might not go days, we might not find food for days, and obviously your body doesn't want you to just fall over and shut down, because then you die. So resveratrol is something that your body then produces in order to make you really strong and to bolster your immune system and to effectively stop aging for the time that you've got it in your body, because it doesn't, because aging is, you know, like disease, bad things, all of the things that happen, you can kind of boil down to it's age, it's your body aging, you know.
Right.
So resveratrol halts aging, is what it does. And there's a link between the Wim Hof method and resveratrol. You know, that doing stuff like having a cold shower makes your body produce resveratrol, which is an anti-aging agent. You know, it's an agent for good in your body. So, you know, there are certain types of stress which are really good for you. Jumping into the sea. You know, everyone knows, like, oh, people go, oh, I feel so great when I jump into a river.
Oh, yeah, you do. You feel amazing after. Like, when it's freezing cold afterwards, you feel really good.
Yes, you know, so it's a multi-layered reason. Your body is producing dopamine, so you're getting effectively like a hit of cocaine, but without turning into an arsehole. And you're getting natural good chemicals. You know, dopamine makes you feel really good. It's like when you eat a bar of chocolate, a really good chocolate, when you have sex, have a wank, all of these things make you produce dopamine. You know, you're having, it's chemically an incredibly lovely feeling, you know, as we know, you know, these are the things that make us feel really good.
Yeah.
So, and the Wim Hof method does that. But then, you know, I was talking about inflammation. And I found out, well, I've been really interested for a few years now in gut health. And I've been finding out more and more about that. And again, through the Rich Roll podcast, I was really, it's just amazing being a fly on the wall in these conversations between Rich and these very learned scientists, doctors, health experts, and a couple of them that I was absolutely mesmerized by were the gut health guys. There's also this Australian doctor, what's her name? I forget. She's got a funny name. She's basically this brilliant, she works in London. She's like this gut health expert, and I've learned lots from her too. So, you know, scientists used to think that your brain was the most complicated thing in your body, and that it was the be all and the end all, and it had the more connections in your brain than any other in your body. And there are more things happening in your brain than you know, any other part of your body. But it's now, that's now been proven wrong, because, you know, there's billions of things happening in your brain, but in your gut, there are trillions of things happening. Like, there are trillions of these little microbes in your gut. And there are, you know, you've heard the expression, like, you know, think with your gut, like make a decision with your gut. These are all.
Yeah, yeah. You know. I did see something a while ago, and they were like, we should be, you make gut decisions, and we should almost be thinking about the gut as another brain. Because
that's exactly right. You've just hit the nail on the head. We've got two brains in our body.
Yeah.
The obvious one is here, but the one that people didn't really know it, but well, they kind of knew about, because why would you say think with your gut? Like,
yeah,
like people thousands of years ago, probably in Iran and Iraq and Mesopotamia, and you know, they knew about this stuff. But like, science is really at its cutting edge now with that. And again, they're looking at like inflammation markers and stuff are coming from the gut. And you know, you've got these trillions and trillions of things which get really badly harmed when you take antibiotics, for example, or you eat loads of meat and loads of things that have got antibiotics in it. When you harm your gut, you're harming yourself in a profound way, not just your physical health, but your mental health. And that's all one thing. You know, we know now that is physical health, and it's just health, right? The two things are linked, and also that there is now a proven scientific link between your gut health and your mental health and your physical health. So they, you know, I've looked at studies, proper controlled experiment studies with, you know, that have studied thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people in some cases, and they have found an absolutely unshakable 100% scientific total truth that if you look after your gut, then you will be, and they've quantified this, about 33% your life expectancy will go up by about a third. Your mental health will go up by between 30 and 40%. You know, all of these incredibly good things happen because you're looking after your gut. And your gut is making decisions like separately from your brain. You know, there is a sense of autonomy with your gut. And if it's healthy, then it's sending your body biochemical signals that are beneficial to, you know, to disease fighting, to fighting things like COVID-19, to flus, colds, you know, all of the bad things that are around us all the time. You know, we have to keep our immune system up at a level that can fight this constant barrage of bad things that is around in the way that we live at the moment. It's like there are these two lines, like if you can imagine the two lines on a hi-fi system, you've got bass and treble, those lines that go up and down, you know. You've got your immune system is one of these bars and the bad things that are around you is another one, and you're trying to always keep the immune system above the other one, and when the other one takes over, that's when the bad thing happens. That's when the flu takes over, or the cold, or God forbid the cancer or whatever. Like, you know, it's a constant battle that's happening. And if you are doing things like, you know, if you're eating plant-based mostly, and if you're not doing antibiotics, you're avoiding things that have got antibiotics in it. In other words, you're looking after your gut, you're eating prebiotics. I just want to find out how much I'm teaching my grandmother how to suck eggs. You obviously know what antibiotics are. Do you know what probiotics are?
No, not really. No.
So probiotics are things that have gone a bit wrong, like things that have been naturally fermented. So things that are kind of alive, like, you know, like live yogurt or sourdough bread or sauerkraut. You know, sauerkraut that, you know, that German people put on their sausage. The sauerkraut is just cabbage that's been allowed to go wrong. Or kimchi, that lovely Korean stuff, which is, you know, Chinese leaf cabbage and chilies. And you basically stick it in a jar and you let it go wrong. You let it go off. And the good, the natural fermentation that happens, and all the bacteria that happen, is actually really good for you. So those are probiotics. The exact opposite to antibiotics. So if you have to take antibiotics because you've got an infection, which you'll die unless you take antibiotics, then it's a really good idea to take probiotics in between them, just to have something there, because the antibiotic is like a nuclear missile. It just kills everything. It's a bunker buster. Okay. It's like, you know, when people have cancer and they have chemo and radio, you know, it's one of those, it's the leveler. It's just like, there's this bad thing and it's surrounded by all these good things. Let's just kill everything. And then, you know, that's the way it sounds awful, but that's where modern science is on those kinds of diseases at the moment. It's like that old Guy de Montfort, at the, when he was ethnic cleansing Southern Europe, and they were saying, oh, there's a whole castle of people here, and some of them are Catholics and some of them are not Catholics. Like, how do we decide? And he says, well, kill them all and then let God decide. that's what
we're talking about here.
When I was growing up, I had constant ear infections, like constant problems with my ears and sinuses, and I still do to a degree. And I was always on antibiotics. And then a little while ago, I noticed I got a ridge in my teeth. And I went to the dentist, and the dentist said, did you have a lot of antibiotics as a kid? Yeah. He went, that's why you've got a ridge in your teeth.
Wow. Weird.
Like, no one ever says anything about antibiotics, really, do they? It's like, well, you don't take them too much, but apart from that, there's not really... You know, it doesn't seem like there's much said about the consequences of. But the thing, what you're talking about, though, is that, like, I often think, like, that's the ideal, isn't it? So you eat healthily, you exercise, and you look after your mind, like, meditate, do Wim Hof. I always think that's usually the answer. you know, to do all of those things. So you actually look after yourself and then you'll feel better.
That's it.
So you cover all the areas. I was talking with someone else the other day about just generally, he was saying that he'll run every day. And if he doesn't run, he feels really bad and he knows about it. And the way he's kind of, he had a cancerous brain tumour. And he swears by the fact that he started running, he started doing Wim Hof. And I end up talking about Wim Hof all the time. That's your fault.
Good.
He started doing that and then meditating. And he swears by it, that's how he's beating it. And that's how he keeps well. And I just think there's that, like for me, that's my last hurdle really. Is I don't eat a lot of meat, which is one thing. I probably eat meat like once a week.
Well, your missus is vegetarian, isn't she?
Well, yeah. I'm a kid, so like, there's not really a lot of scope to eat meat.
Well, that's good.
But I figure for me to really kind of go over into the properly being well means like I start eating vegetables and things. And I'll have to exercise. But like you post pictures of food, your food always looks really good, and your food's always really healthy, isn't it?
Well, this is it. I've been an omnivore my whole life, but you know, recently I've really been converted by the overwhelming scientific evidence to a much more plant-based diet. I was already halfway there, but I was, you know, in my weekly shop, I'd always buy some chicken. I could buy a chicken. And so then three of my, you know, dinners of the week would be chicken. And I might treat myself to a bit of beef or a bit of lamb or whatever. And, you know, so I was kind of like probably majority meat and two veg kind of a guy. And so I like my meat. You know, I love my lasagna. I love my this, my that, and the other, my moussaka. So my burgers. So I have come at it from the view of a meat eater, same way as I came at dance music from a rocker, punker's point of view. Mm-hmm. And I make meaty things. Like I make lasagna, but it's plant-based. Well, I still eat cheese in moderation, but it's vegetarian. You know, I make a cracking moussaka that is actually better than the lamb one. And I just think about, okay, so I've got to make a mince. How do I make my mince as good as actual mince, as beef? You know, beef is the most horrible, unsustainable, terrible meat in the world. But it's delicious. You know, you can't get around that. It is delicious. So how do we get that incredible umami flavor? And you can do it. You absolutely can do it. Like you can get pea protein mince, and then you can get hold of things like dried mushrooms and sort of make a cup of tea with these dried mushrooms and then pour that in to give it that lovely flavor. You can put in a spoon of peanut butter, which gives it a lovely richness. You can put in, you know, Henderson's relish, which is like a sort of northern Worcester sauce, and miso paste, you know, that which Japanese use to make miso soup and to put umami flavors and stuff. There are so many things that have that lovely, but it's like bass in music. It's like a bottom end flavor. Yeah, and you can make the most phenomenal meaty burgers, lasagnas, you know, bolognese, all of these things. I make them and they are just as good as the meat version. And I'll make, like, last night I had, like, one of my obsessions at the moment is Korean food. And we have KFC.
I had that round yours. It was amazing.
Oh yes, right. So now I'm doing Korean. So KFC is Korean fried chicken, and we do that just with, like, you know, corn pieces, or with I found this like sort of South African thing that I have in my local supermarket, and it's like sort of breaded. What do they call them? Chicken tenders, and it's not chicken, and it's already breaded. So I put a sort of a Korean style batter over the top of it and double fry it. And then you just got the most of them and make the sauce, which you had round at mine. Delicious, right?
Yeah.
So, and because with that, it's not the chicken that's delicious. It's the crunchiness of the coating. Yeah. And it's that beautiful, sweet, sour and hot sauce that comes around it. And actually we come back to we come back to that, to the gut health thing there, because one of the ingredients is in that sauce is gochujang, which is this phenomenal umami. It's a fermented chili paste, a Korean fermented chili paste, and you can get it in big Sainsbury's now. It's that popular, gochujang, and it's just, it's chili paste that's kind of gone slightly wrong. It's naturally fermented, so it's, you know, it's got, it's alive kind of thing, and it tastes absolutely amazing, and that's what gives you that incredible flavor. And you know, it's not about the chicken at all. And of course, then it's, it acts as a prebiotic. So you've got, we were talking about this before. You've got antibiotics, you've got probiotics, but I found out now about this thing that I didn't know about, which is a prebiotic. So things like dates, for example, are a fantastic prebiotic. And what a prebiotic does is it goes into your gut and then it makes your gut produce these little things that are really, really good for your gut. Some of these trillions of organisms, of microbes and things that are happening. So there are certain foods that your gut really, really likes, you know, these pulses and certain dried fruits, and it's always plant-based things like meat. I've come to that. My life hack now is I'm on a, what I call a 20-to-1 diet. So I have, if there are, and my normal week is, if you have 3 meals a day, that's 21 meals a week. And then I do 20 vegetarian and 1 meat. And I look forward to that. But then it doesn't always work out like that, because last week I actually didn't have any meat. So I've gone 42 or whatever it is days without it. But, you know, what I'll do is I'll just think, oh, you know, on Sunday, I'm going to buy a steak and I'm going to have a steak. Or Sunday, I'm going to have like KFC with actual chicken. I'm going to treat myself to something. I'll get a takeaway. Like on my birthday, I got takeaway. I just really fancied a chicken. I got like a takeaway chicken burger delivered.
Yeah,
and all that. And but the thing is, I won't do that thing where you just go to your supermarket and you just buy a shit piece of steak. I went to the butcher. The last time I had a steak was weeks and weeks and weeks ago. I went to the butcher and I bought an amazing piece of grass-fed steak, a T-bone steak. I never would have bought that because I would never have spent that amount of money on one thing. Like, it's just,
you're going to have steak like once every 6 months, and you might as well have. Like,
exactly. So I'll realistically have steak once, maybe every few months, or something. Like, once every couple of months, or something. Like, I'll just go out and get a steak, and it'll be a grass-fed, really well-reared, you know, well-fed animal, and I'm sure it'll be less bad than, you know, just some shit piece of meat you get from a supermarket. And the thing is, you know, it's not good for me on almost any level. I'm getting a few good things from it, because the one thing that you miss, I've discovered, if you go plant-based, totally plant-based, then I think it's B12 that you can't get. That's the only thing you can't get. And so you take, you know, you can take supplements for that. But if you go on paleo and all these other trendy diets, you miss on a whole load of other things. I've been really looking at the whole nutrition aspect, and you know, plant-based is the most nutrient dense diet that there is, and it chimes with how we are as people. If you go back to, again, we are roaming, you know, we were cave people.
We were
hunter-gatherers, but we were mostly gatherers, because hunting's hard. When, you know, if you don't have guns and, you know, and these things want to kill you and eat you, whatever, it's hard fucking getting an animal and killing it. Like, it, you know, especially you've got nothing to do it with. And so people were mostly surviving on, you know, berries, nuts, foraged food, you know. And if you look at your gut, it's a really long, very long, long thing. You know, carnivores have a really short gut. It's just like, bang, eat, swallow it all. Get as much nutrients as in a small amount of time, out comes the shit. Whereas herbivores have really long guts, because they are taking the nutrients out, you know, slowly and over a long time. So, you know, we are not carnivores naturally.
Yeah, I always thought that was the case, that we're not naturally carnivores. Yeah, we're not actually really made to eat meat.
It's occasional, you know. It's like we're the truth is we are omnivores, and the absolute, I think, most optimal diet for a human being is plants almost all the time, and a little bit of meat, just a little bit every now and again, just to get the thing, the B12 that your plant just can't give you. And to give you some amino acids that, you know, you'll find a few good things in the blood or whatever. Like, so, but there are so many things there that are bad for you that it's a give and take situation. But if you take the helicopter view and you're just eating meat very, very occasionally, then I think that looked at is the optimal diet for a human being. And that's going to make your mental health better. Absolutely. You know, if you eat meat all the time, three times a day, like your average American, you're going to be pissed off and angry, and you know, you're not going to be shitting right. We all know how that feels. You're going to be constipated. You're going to not be happy on a gut level, and that is going to make a difference to your mental health and your physical health.
Yeah, I think, you know, just kind of on real simple terms, as in, if you feed shit into your body, then shit is what comes out. So, you know, if you're eating badly, then you're going to feel badly. If you're, you're just looking at, or the horribleness of Brexit, for example, then you're going to feel horrible. You know, like, we have to be aware of what we're putting into our bodies, even down to the things that we say to ourselves and the things that we look at.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to be aware of that, because if you're actually feeding in anger and spite, then you're going to feel angry and spiteful.
Applies
to your stomach as well, you know. You have to be mindful of this stuff, I think.
Totally. You're absolutely right. And we come back to social media now. And I feel as though I've hacked that. You know, when I first started on social media, I remember when I literally first went on Twitter, the first thing I looked at it and I thought, oh, okay, it's just people basically being negative. Or like, it's Facebook. Facebook is like just mostly people being negative. So I just went on there and I said a negative thing about a record and I immediately got a load of hate. loads and loads of hate. I put hate out there. I got hate back. And I have more recently just thought, you know what, I'm going to only put out positive messages. In, you know, when I joined Virgin Radio and I started doing, you know, good news every day, and I would get so much good back when I put good out there. And I know me, I'm a very positive glass half full person. And I just could really feel masses and masses of positivity coming back to me when I put positive things out there. So I just started doing an experiment with myself. And I thought, I'm going to just for a year not say anything positive. I'm not going to say anything negative for a year. I'm not going to put any, like, on my face. I just kind of stopped putting stuff out on Facebook, because Facebook is a bit of a swamp of negativity. And I started using Instagram a lot more and just putting up, like, you know, like trying to inspire people with food. Like you say, you know, I'm mostly plant-based now and I want people to, like you, that is a meat eater, to see that actually you can get really, really fantastic, like chicken wing type, you know, things, burgers and all of these lovely things that us omnivores and meat eaters love. But plant-based, I want to inspire. And so I started doing this and I just noticed that my mental health just soared, like, because I wasn't putting out negative stuff. And also, it's, you choose what you feed in. You know, your eyes are taking in so much stuff, and your ears, especially the way that we live now, surrounded by advertising, and we're looking at our phones and our computers, and we got all of these messages and things coming into us from people. And between every three posts on Instagram, there's now an advert, and on Facebook, there's all these people, like, being, you know, you mentioned the horror of Brexit, so many negative things flying at you all the time. So I basically, pretty much on Facebook now, I don't look at the main feed. I when I switch on Facebook, whatever is the latest thing on the main feed is there. Like, I can't avoid that. So I might engage with that one thing, but I don't scroll down. No. I just use it to answer the messages that I get and to see the reaction to the stuff that I'm putting out and to deal with all of the comments and the mostly very positive comments that and interactions that I'm getting. And that's my interaction with Facebook is that. And then, you know, on Twitter.
I'm the same on pretty much most social media, really. Like, I might go and check out and see what a mate's doing or something, or offer to, you know, like just show support to things that I feel strongly about and that. But mostly, I don't really go down the feed particularly because it's just, yeah, people are unhappy or they're moaning about something. And I'm like, I'm trying not to engage with that stuff. You know, like you said, you know, you made that decision. I'm not going to engage with it because actually it makes you feel bad.
And like, yeah, that's it. And I control it even insofar as, like, I used to watch the news all the time.
Yeah.
And now I just don't watch it. Like, people go, oh, you know, that just make you ignorant. You don't know what's going on. I do know what's going on. I still absorb it because I see the front pages of all newspapers when I go to work or in, you know, in the street. And every now and again, if there's something obviously really important happening, you know, I will engage with that.
Yeah.
But on a daily, hourly, whatever, like I used to be obsessed with news, I just, because it's always bad, almost always bad. It's always somebody, how many people have been killed, not yeah. how many people have survived. It's always the bad person stabbing the good person, or it's never the good person saving the, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. And so I look for, and I find all these amazing stories. It's always like, oh, all these immigrants are coming in on these boats while we're not watching. And like, I find the stories about the immigrant that has a racist guy hurl abuse at them in the street. And then the immigrant says to them, what's wrong? Are you okay? I've got a restaurant. Why don't you come and get some food with me? And then this you know, borderline Nazi ends up going with them and having a free lunch. And then they talk to them and they find out that their mum is dying of cancer and that they've had their, you know, their DHSS cut off or whatever. And they're really angry and really, really pissed off. And they just, you know, he said, I'm just taking it out on you. I'm really sorry. And I haven't got a job. And then the guy goes, I'm going to give you a job. Why don't you work at my restaurant? And then suddenly this guy is like, oh God, yeah, this guy's crying, just going, I'm so sorry that I called you, you know, whatever I, you know, was that he called him. And this is a true story. I find all these stories about, like, young black kids saving old ladies, not young black kids stabbing everyone.
That one's interesting.
Do you know what I mean? The media just wants you to, the Daily Mail and all those guys, they want you to think that every single black kid wants to stab you, and and that every single Muslim person wants to blow you up, and that every young person wants to rob you. Like, it's bollocks. These are the sociopathic minorities. I'm interested in the ones that want to save people and help people and act in an altruistic and life-affirming way. That's the news that I engage with, and I find it every day and I share it. And I'm getting all of these, like, this lovely lady tweeted in the last week just going, I love your news things, your news, good news so much that I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to start a website. I'm going to start a Facebook page and an Instagram. And I'm just going to just do good news to share with my friends, because I feel it makes me feel so good. All of these things that you're saying. So, you know, you can be in control. That's something that you're directly in control of, what you put in to your eyes and into your brain every day. And if you just seek out good, look for the good, try and cut out the bad, the negative, not just, you know, negative things and negative people. You know, just think, it's almost you this is a really good thing that I got from someone else, was like, you could every now and again just do a stock take of the people that you, of all your mates. Mm. and just think, well, who's making me feel good and who's making me feel bad? Who's just using me to just, like, feed them and never asking me how I am, and who's just, you know, who am I, who's just sucking my energy and never giving anything back. Yeah. And you, if you start like looking at all of your relationships with people, your relationships with things, with media, and just think about it in a positive and negative thing. Which one is positive? Which one is making me feel good? Which one is enhancing my life? If you do an inventory every now and again, then you will find that your mental health will absolutely soar. And if you combine that with good diet, exercise, and also, this is so important, is a connection, not just with people, but with nature. So if you get out, obviously it's easier for people who live near the sea live for between 30 and 40% longer than people, you know, other people who live inland. You know, people who live near forests live about 33% longer and have about a third less chronic disease and stuff like that. These are proven scientific facts now, and they have now quantified, this is interesting, the amount of time the minimum amount of time for you to get a benefit in your life, both physical health and mental health, and it's 20 minutes a day. If you can get in nature, and this can be, doesn't have to be going to the beach or going to a forest, although that is the most, you know, it's any awe of nature. You just go to your local park where there are trees and there are plants and there is a body of water, a pond or something like that. And even that, you know, you see the majesty of winter and the crystals forming in winter. You see the beautiful bud forming in the spring. You see the beautiful foliage in spring and summer. And you see those gorgeous colors in the autumn. No matter what, you see the seasons change. You feel awe of nature. And if you can get some of that in, and here's another interesting thing. You've seen my bathroom, right? It's got a Japanese, I made it all Japanese because, you know, I wanted to. So there's a Japanese a bamboo forest wall. And this is another study that's been done. Sitting in front of a huge picture of something in nature is almost as good as actually being there. There are other ways that you can get into nature. Yeah, because you're getting these biochemical signals through the colors and through the feelings. You know, I look at that wall of bamboo and I just think, oh man, I'm in a Japanese forest. I'm forest bathing. And all of these good thoughts, positive thoughts are coming into my brain. And therefore that sends biochemical signals to my body to heal itself, both physically and mentally.
At the moment, I'm driving all over Essex in the lockdown for work. And Essex is really quite rural. But the other day I was feeling really crappy and I took a diversion which took me on a bridge over a massive lake. I think it was a reservoir. Mm. And I just pulled over, got out of the car and I was like, fucking, this is amazing. And then I started to feel better. I think there's something about being in nature makes you kind of slow down and connect a little bit with the
world
and the things around you. And our general society doesn't really let you do that very much. You know, if you're on your phone or if you're, you know, it's like rush, 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 busy, busy, busy. But actually, just being in nature, like yesterday with my wife, we just sat in the garden for a bit. And everything just slowed down and your whole body kind of slows down a little bit. It's breathing, you know, you just feel a bit connected with the world. And that's almost like meditating, isn't it? It's like it's got a very similar kind of feel to it with that kind
of just slow down
and connect.
Absolutely. So this would be a nice place to end, really. We the other day, so I live in the middle of London, as you know. Yeah. And it's hard to get into. Well, I live in South London and there are lots of parks and stuff like that. So the other day there was, I was listening to Chris Evans' breakfast show on Virgin and there was this this woman on who had written a book about connection with the moon and with planets and stuff like that. It's quite tree-hugging stuff. But the point that she was making was what you just said, that human beings have we've accelerated, everything's accelerated and we need to slow down. The way that the things used to be were like before phones and clocks and all of these things, people used to live by the planets, by the moon especially, because that's the nearest one to us, and you can see what's going on with it. And when they would plant, all of these things that they would do, when they would plant seeds, when they would harvest things, came from the moon. And, you know, the moon obviously governs the tide, it governs the menstrual cycle. It's a very powerful thing. And there was the other day, there was this full moon. It was, what did she call it? It was like people have different words, but it was a spring moon. It was a red moon or a blood moon or whatever. It was a pink moon. I think it was a pink, that's right. It was a pink, it's called a pink moon. And this is a really special time. And there would be, in the old days, you know, thousands of years ago, kind of festivals and parties and stuff happening around, because it was, yes, the winter is over. We are near the vernal equinox when day and night are the same.
Paganism, when it's about nature and about, you follow nature, you don't force nature.
Yeah, that's it. You follow it. Exactly. You follow it and you slow down to this very natural lunar cycle. So what we did that night was, you know, we allowed our one exercise a day.
Yeah.
We had our exercise at night that night. I said, tonight I want to go out and see the pink moon. And it happened to be an absolutely perfect night. There was not a cloud in the sky. And this gorgeous, and I'm in, you know, Dulwich, North Dulwich. It's very, you know, there's houses everywhere.
Yeah.
And we just like walked to where there are these playing fields, and we just kind of looked up, and we were out there for about half an hour, just in utter awe. And I was taking pictures of it and like kind of getting close to it and sort of, and changing the light thing on my phone. So I could see all of the moss and I could see the craters and stuff on the moon, you know, which you normally can't when you take a picture on your phone. And, you know, don't worry, I put my phone away after a couple of minutes. And we were just in utter awe of this incredible orb that is reflecting the sun, and like that's it, you know. That was our 20 minutes. We got of concentrated, I feel like we got about an hour's worth of nature for that week, just in that half an hour walk. You know, you really can, and we both felt absolutely amazing afterwards. Like, you stopped at that reservoir and you said, I felt better. You know, I would have said straight away to you, how did that make you feel? And it made
it
you feel
that awe, that kind of awe at the beauty and the power of nature. And it makes you feel kind of small and insignificant. And I think that can sometimes make you feel bad. But because I'm doing so well now, that actually makes me think, well, what about the possibilities then? You know, if it's so small, it's like nothing really matters. So I can do anything. I can be anywhere. I can, you know, like, this is amazing that I'm here. Whereas in the past, it would have been like, I didn't like looking at nature because I think it was the opposite. But now I'm like, isn't this amazing? Look, how lucky are we that I can just stop here now and look at that. You know, that makes me feel lucky now. And that's the difference. But I do, that kind of, it makes you feel small. And you think, actually, we're part of something bigger here.
Exactly.
Not a religious thing, but we're part of something bigger. So, you know, let's just all be nice and enjoy it. You know,
rather than
angry.
You came across almost like Bill Hicks there. You know, at the end of every Bill, you're a Bill Hicks fan, aren't you? You know, at the end of every single Bill Hicks diatribe, and you know, he's for me the greatest comedian that's ever lived. He would always say, you know, what if we realize that we are all part of the same vibration, and that we are all the same, and we are all equal, and that we should love each other and love everyone. Wouldn't it be a great world if we could just, you know, do that and take the money that we spend on weapons, which would the money that we spend on weapons would eradicate world hunger and disease twice over. How about that? So I think you've just ended this podcast in the most beautiful way. That's it. We are all part of the same vibration, and this connection with nature absolutely makes us feel that. And there is now, like I say, a proven link between that and your mental health.
and therefore your physical health. And those, both of those links are proven. So there we are. I feel as though I've given you all of my best life hacks now.
Brilliant. We're pretty much, we've done the hour. So that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Eddie. It's always great to talk to you. Thanks for coming back on.
You're very welcome, man. And it's great to see you. So you're buzzing with...
Yeah, I am buzzing.
With health, with creativity, you're in this lockdown better, so you're going to come out of it better, and that's a lesson for all of us.
I think so. Thank you, mate.
Big love, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.